Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are calibrating the time circuits for right now, late February 2026.
Right here and now.
Exactly. And look, usually when we talk about the state of tech, we are looking at the shiny stuff, right?
Mm.
The consumer gadgets.
Right.
The new VR headsets or the apps that promise to organize your life. But, you know, they just end up sending you more notifications.
Yeah, the surface level noise, stuff you see on the billboards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But today we are doing something very different. We are digging into a report called Tekin Night. And honestly, reading through this, well, it feels less like a standard market analysis and more like a manifesto.
A manifesto from the engine room of the future.
It really is. It is heavy. Mm. It is technical. And it claims that while everyone was watching the software updates, the hardware folks changed the rules of the game entirely.
It really is a fascinating document. You know, most industry reports are pretty dry, but this one starts with a metaphor that actually lands.
The night shift.
Yes, they call it the night shift.
Yeah, let's set the scene with that because it captures the vibe perfectly.
So the idea is that the festive noise of the market, the CES hype, the keynote speeches, the product launches, that is the day shift. That is the carnival.
Everyone is having fun.
Right. But the true signals of power only start resonating when the shop closes. That is the night shift. That is when the engineers and the metallurgists and the silicon architects take over.
The people actually building the stuff.
Exactly. And yeah. Tekin Night is arguing that we are currently in that night phase. The marketing has faded, and now we are seeing what the machines are actually made of.
I love that framing.
Yeah.
It is like, forget the fluff. Let's look at the metal.
Yeah.
And the mission for this deep dive is to unpack what the report calls a seismic shift in global computing.
Mm-hmm.
We are not just talking about faster computers. We are talking about a fundamental change in how computers work.
Absolutely. We are looking at three massive pillars here. The death of the operating system, the destruction of the memory wall, and a completely new standard for digital security.
And it all pivots around one central thesis. If you take nothing else away from today, it is this shift from instructional computing to goal-oriented computing.
That is the headline right there. That is the paradigm shift.
So let's break that down immediately. Instructional versus goal-oriented. To me, that sounds a bit like corporate buzzword bingo.
I know it does.
What does that actually mean for the person listening who just bought a laptop last week? Is their machine already obsolete?
Well, think about your relationship with that laptop. For the last 40 years, really since the command line, the paradigm has been transactional. You are the operator.
Right.
You sit at the keyboard and you issue specific micro instructions. You click file. You click open. You type a sentence. You hit save. You are micromanaging the machine.
I'm the boss, but I am a micromanager. The computer is just a dumb intern that does exactly what I tell it to do step by step. If I forget to tell it to save.
It is not save.
Exactly.
Precisely. It has no agency. It waits for input.
Yeah.
But the CES 2026 manifesto, which is referenced heavily in our source material and signed by players like NVIDIA, AMD, and Amazon, declares that era officially over.
Over entirely.
We are entering the age of goal-oriented computing. You stop giving instructions. You start assigning outcomes.
Okay, but we have heard this promise before, right?
Okay.
Siri, book me a table. And it never really works smoothly. How is this different? Give us a concrete example of a workflow in this new era.
Okay, take a complex task, something like planning a business trip. In the instructional era today, basically, you open an airline app to check flights.
Yeah.
Then you open your calendar to check dates. Then you open your email to coordinate with your team. Then you open a hotel app to find a place near the office. You are the bridge connecting all these siloed applications.
You are the glue.
You are the glue.
It is exhausting just hearing you list it all out. Mm-hmm. I am the one copy-pasting addresses and checking times.
Yeah, exactly. In a goal-oriented architecture, you simply say to the system, plan a business trip to Tokyo for the Q3 review and prepare all necessary documentation.
And the silicon just handles it.
The silicon manages the execution. It figures out the flight availability. It cross-references your calendar, drafts the emails to your team books, the hotel that fits corporate policy, and compiles the briefing docs based on what it knows about the Q3 review.
Wow.
The hardware stops being a passive tool and becomes an active partner.
Okay, that sounds incredible. But again, why now? Why is 2026 the tipping point? Because software has been getting smarter for years, why does this report treat this as a hardware revolution?
That is the crucial question. And the answer lies in the mission dossier section of the report. The bottleneck was not the cleverness of the software. It was the hardware's inability to feed the brain fast enough.
The memory wall.
We call it the memory wall, yes.
Yes, this section was vivid. They use a great analogy. Processor speed without memory bandwidth is like a Ferrari engine in a wooden cart.
It is a perfect visual. By 2025, we had these incredibly fast GPUs, the Ferrari engines. They could calculate wildly fast, but they were starving for data because the connection to the memory storage was too slow.
Right.
The engine was revving, but the wheels were not turning. The data could not travel from the storage to the compute unit fast enough to keep the AI fed.
So the data could not get to the brain fast enough to make those complex decisions in real time.
Exactly. But the report highlights that as of right now, February 2026, Samsung has officially demolished that wall with HBM4.
HBM4. High bandwidth memory 4. Now, I know you listening might hear HBM4 and just think, okay, this is the next version number, like going from iPhone 15 to 16. But the source insists this is different. Why is this not just a speed bump?
Because this is not just about making the chip smaller or faster in the traditional sense. This is a revolution in metallurgy and what they call 3D packaging.
3D packaging. What does that actually look like? Are we building skyscrapers on the chip?
That is exactly what we are doing. Imagine a traditional motherboard. You have the processor over here. Let's call it the office building, and the memory chips over there. The library.
Yay.
Even if they are close, they are connected by wires, roads on the board. Electrons have to travel that distance. That takes time and energy.
Sure. It is a commute.
Samsung's HBM4 changes the geography. They have integrated the logic die directly with the memory stacks. They are stacking the brain right on top of the memory using TSV technology through silicon via.
Through silicon via. That sounds like a sci-fi tunnel.
It is exactly like a tunnel. Instead of taking a bus across town to get data, the processor just takes an elevator downstairs. The physical distance is reduced to near zero.
So there is virtually no travel time for the data.
None. It creates a 2048-bit interface. To put that in perspective, that is a highway so wide that AI models with trillions of parameters, which used to choke older systems, can now flow in real time.
And there was a stat here that really jumped out at me, especially knowing how much energy these massive data centers consume. The report says this architecture reduces power consumption by 40%.
Which is massive. The source calls it pure gold for energy-starved data centers. We were hitting a ceiling where we physically could not pump enough electricity into these buildings to run the AI.
Right, the grid was maxing out.
HBM4 solves that. If you want an autonomous agent running 24/7, figuring out your Tokyo trip while you sleep, you cannot have it burning coal like a steam engine. HBM4 is the lifeblood of this new era.
So we have the blood flowing. Let's talk about the body itself. The source spends a lot of time on NVIDIA. Now, most people know them as the GPU guys, right? The stock market darlings, the ones making video games look realistic.
Right. But the source explicitly says NVIDIA has shifted. They are no longer a GPU manufacturer. They are now a synthetic body constructor.
That sounds ominous. Or maybe just very cyberpunk. A synthetic body constructor. What does that actually mean in terms of silicon?
It refers to their new Rubin architecture. This is the successor to the Blackwell chips everyone's talking about last year. Rubin is designed to natively integrate with that Samsung HBM4 we just discussed.
So Rubin is the body and HBM4 is the circulation system.
Exactly. And the nervous system is the connectivity. The expert notes describe the next generation NVLink interconnects. This is what allows thousands of these GPUs to communicate as if they were a single superprocessor.
Hold on, let's unpack superprocessor. Usually when we link computers, it is like a cluster, right? One computer talks to another. It takes time.
Correct. Usually there is latency, a lag. But with this new NVLink, the latency is so low that the software does not see computer A and computer B. It just sees one giant, massive brain.
So it is a hive mind.
It is a hive mind that acts as a single entity. And this connects back to that goal-oriented concept. You do not need this level of power just to render better shadows in Call of Duty. You need this infrastructure for self-correcting AI.
Self-correcting, what does that imply exactly?
Mm-hmm. It means resilience. If you give an AI a goal plan, my trip, and it hits a snag like a canceled flight or a booked hotel, it needs to replan instantly. It needs to think its way around the problem without asking you for help.
So did not just pop up an error message.
No, that requires a massive amount of inference compute power. It needs to simulate 10 different options, pick the best one, and execute it all in the blink of an eye. That is what the Rubin architecture is built for. It is built to think on its feet.
Okay, so we have the brain and we have the memory to feed it. But here is where the report gets really provocative. It challenges something I think we all take for granted. The source claims that the operating system is dying.
Yes. The operating system is dying. It is definitely the most controversial take in the document.
I mean, I grew up with Windows 95. I use Mac OS every day. The idea of a computer without an OS, it feels like a car without a steering wheel. How do you even use it? What am I clicking on?
Well, let's look at why the OS exists in the first place. Historically, the OS was a bridge, a translator. You speak human clicks and drags, and the OS translates that into machine code that the hardware understands. It manages the files, the memory, the drivers.
Right, it is the middleman.
But in this new goal-oriented world where an AI agent is doing the work, the OS becomes a bottleneck. The source calls it digital bureaucracy.
Digital bureaucracy. I like that. So Windows is just red tape preventing the AI from talking to the chip.
Exactly. If the AI has to go through the Windows kernel to ask the processor to do something that is wasted time, it is latency. The report says we are moving toward native agent execution.
Native agent execution. That sounds intense.
It means the AI model sits directly on the hardware layer. You will not deal with files or folders or a start menu. You will not boot up to a desktop wallpaper.
So what happens when I turn it on?
It just is. It is likely always awake. You interact with a persistent, intelligent agent. It knows your context. It knows your history. You just speak to it or type to it, and it acts. It bypasses the traditional interface entirely.
That is a fundamental shift in user interface. It is not a graphical user interface anymore. It is an intentions interface.
Basically. And the source introduces a new metric for this, something they call silicon to LLM cohesion. Basically, how well does the hardware bond with the language model?
And the quote here is pretty brutal regarding legacy tech. It says, if hardware cannot host a local agent, it is expensive inert metal.
It is a harsh truth for 2026. The implication is the end of heavy software licensing. You are not buying a license for Windows or Office anymore. You are buying a device that has a digital entity living inside it. The value is in the agent, not the window dressing.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here. I can hear listeners screaming at their speakers. If I have this agent living on my hardware, knowing everything about me, planning my trips, reading my emails, and managing my documents, I immediately worry about privacy.
You should.
And not just advertisers tracking me privacy, but real security.
Yeah.
If that agent gets hacked, I'm done.
And you should worry. That is the dark side of the night shift. The source identifies data leakage as the single greatest fear for corporations in 2026.
Because usually to analyze data, you have to decrypt it, right?
Mm.
If I send my data to the cloud to be processed, it has to be unlocked for the AI to read it.
Historically, yes. You encrypt data to send it through the pipes like putting a letter in an envelope.
Open.
But to read the letter, you have to open the envelope. That brief moment of unlocking when the data is in use, that is when the hackers strike. That is the vulnerability window.
So how do we fix that? If the AI needs to read the data to help me, how can it stay encrypted? That feels like a paradox.
This is where the report gets into some really advanced math. It introduces Samsung's Project Niobium and the SEMI5 chips. These are built on an 8-nanometer process, but the manufacturing is not the headline. The capability is. They feature FHE.
FHE, fully homomorphic encryption.
It is a mouthful, but the concept is basically magic. It allows the AI to perform computations on data while it is still encrypted.
Wait, so it can analyze the data without actually seeing it? How is that even possible?
Okay, let's use an analogy. Imagine you have a locked box with numbers inside. You want to add them up. Usually you unlock the box, take the numbers out, add them, and put the result back.
Right. And while the numbers are out, someone can steal them.
Exactly. With FHE, imagine you have a special pair of gloves built into the side of the box. You can reach in and manipulate the contents. You can crush the numbers together, do the math. But you never unlock the box, and you never actually see the numbers.
Wow.
You are manipulating the encrypted gibberish mathematically. The AI does the math on the encrypted data, and the result is the correct encrypted answer. Only you have the key to read the result.
That is, okay, that is mind-blowing. The source uses a medical example here.
Yes. Guys. Imagine a hospital sending top-secret patient records to a cloud AI for diagnosis. The AI analyzes the pattern, spots the cancer, and sends back the results. But the AI never actually saw the patient's name or the raw scan. It remained mathematical noise to the AI the entire time.
So it is like performing surgery with a blindfold on, but doing it perfectly.
Exactly. And the expert notes in the report are very strict on this. They say that in 2026, if hardware lacks FHE capabilities, it has no place in government or military projects. Security has moved from software like installing an antivirus to the silicon itself. The chip itself protects the data.
It really feels like the rules of the game have completely changed. So if I am a listener sitting here in 2026 trying to figure out what tech to buy, maybe I am upgrading my company's fleet or just buying a high-end workstation. The old specs do not matter anymore, do they?
Not really. You cannot just look at gigahertz or RAM size in the traditional sense. The source includes a buyer's guide or a survival strategy that pivots to new metrics.
Yeah, usually I would look at clock speed. This one is 3.5 gigahertz. This one is 4.0. Is that dead?
It is not dead, but it is secondary. The advice is to prioritize TOPS, trillions of operations per second. TOPS represents the agent's capacity to learn and react. It is a measure of intelligence density.
Intelligence density, I like that. So I'm not buying speed. I am buying IQ points for my machine.
In a way, yes. And the second thing to look for, as we discussed, is bandwidth. The source says bandwidth is king. You need to look for that HBM4 or advanced LPDDR standards. Because if you have a high TOPS processor, a genius brain, but slow memory, it is paralyzed.
It was like having Einstein stuck in traffic on the 405.
Perfect analogy. He might be a genius, but if he cannot get to the lab, he cannot solve the problem.
And finally, there was a point in the strategy guide that felt more philosophical, almost political. It was about digital sovereignty.
This was the heaviest part of the report for me. The quote is, "Local compute power and FHE security are the only borders between digital sovereignty and cloud slavery."
Cloud slavery. That is stark.
It is dramatic, but think about it. If your AI agent relies entirely on the cloud to think if every time you ask a question, it has to go to a server owned by a megacorporation to get the answer, you are beholden to them.
Right.
They can throttle you. They can censor you. They can charge you rent on your own thoughts.
But if you have the TOPS and the bandwidth to run that agent locally,
then you own the brain. You maintain control. You maintain sovereignty. The move to powerful local hardware is not just about speed. It is about independence. It is about owning the means of intelligence.
So to summarize where we are witnessing what the source calls a Silicon coup. We are building physical bodies, that is the Rubin architecture and HBM4, for digital entities that are going to manage our lives.
And the tech and verdict is clear. Operating systems die so agents can be born. The interface is no longer a window you look through. It is an entity you talk to.
Which leaves us with a really big question.
Mm-hmm.
The source ends on this, and I think it is something we all need to sit with.
The manager question.
Yeah. If your computer is no longer a tool you command, if I am not just typing file open, but it is a partner that sets its own execution paths, at what point does the user become the manager?
And are you ready to give up that control?
Right.
Because being a manager is very different from being an operator. You have to trust the execution. You have to trust that the agent is not hallucinating or cutting corners or misunderstanding your goal.
Trust the silicon. That is a lot to think about. We're going to leave it there for this deep dive. Thanks for listening, and good luck navigating the new silicon order.
Stay curious.
See you next time.